from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Judy Campbell in for Michael Krasny. In our first half hour, it's the war of rival ride-sharing apps. San Francisco-based companies Uber and Lyft are accusing each other of underhanded tactics to poach drivers and gum up their systems. What does the rivalry mean for the future of these startups and their battle with the taxi industry? And at 9:30, more than 2,400 people have signed a petition objecting to a newly adopted health textbook in Fremont High Schools, saying the sections on sex are too racy. Do ninth graders need to know about oral sex, bondage, sexual games, vibrators? That's next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio, I'm Judy Campbell in for Michael Krasny. Ride-sharing sounds like such a friendly term, but there is a war on between ride-sharing apps Uber and Lyft, both based in San Francisco. The companies are offering up to $500 to poach the other's drivers. They accuse each other of placing and canceling ride requests of the rival company just to slow down response times. And competition for customers is so fierce that Lyft was foregoing a profit to lower prices enough to bring people in. So what does this all mean for customers, for the taxi industry fighting these companies, and for the future of these app-based services? We're joined by Doug McMillan. He's technology reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Dan Brackey, blogger and online editor for KQED. He edits NewsFix, KQED's blog about news in the Bay Area and beyond. Thanks for joining, Dan.
Hi, Judy.
So Doug McMillan, talk about these tactics. We're hearing stories of companies offering everything from money to tacos to poach drivers.
Yeah, it's getting really ruthless. This is an industry that really didn't even exist a few years ago, and it's suddenly become one of the fiercest battles in technology. And the reason for that is these are two companies who see an opportunity to play a big role, not only in kind of the future of ride sharing in this kind of new burgeoning space, but perhaps in the future of transportation. More and more people, particularly in San Francisco and other urban centers, are using these apps that they can just press a button on their smartphone to summon a ride within a few minutes. A lot of people are foregoing using taxis, foregoing using buses, trains. A lot of people are reconsidering owning their own cars because of the prevalence in these apps and because they're a relatively affordable way to get around. So that popularity, that growing popularity of these services is really fueling a war between the two leading players in this space, Uber and Lyft.
Now, Uber is the bigger company.
Uber is much bigger, yeah.
Right. And talk about that. What's kind of their sort of personality differences between these companies? Right?
Yeah. So I guess the first thing to keep in mind is the size difference. Uber is in about three times as many cities, and they're outside the U.S., whereas Lyft is only in the U.S. Uber has about four times as many employees, and Uber has raised about four times as much money from investors and from venture capitalists. So there's a big size difference. There's also a big difference between the cultures of the companies. Uber has sort of branded itself as the slick, polished kind of they started with this black car service where they previously only used Lincoln Town Cars to kind of show up and give you a white glove treatment for a higher price. They've since adapted that model, and they now have a service called UberX, which is a more low-cost alternative. But Lyft, by contrast, is kind of cast itself as the fuzzier, friendlier, more neighborly service. You see them driving around the city in these pink mustaches in the grill of these cars, and they're more about kind of enabling a sense of community and fostering a community between people who are picking each other up. And the characteristic greeting of someone who gets into a Lyft is they're supposed to fist bump the driver.
Okay, friendly image maybe, but some of the tactics that have been going on are pretty fierce. You want to just describe some of what's been happening?
Yeah, so these companies are engaged in an all-out war. They, as you said before, are poaching each other's drivers, which involves kind of offering these bounties of several hundred dollars.
Well, talk about how they're doing that, because they're calling for the other company's ride, a very short one, right? So they take the driver out of circulation.
Yeah, so Lyft is alleging that Uber employees and drivers are essentially calling up a Lyft to come to them. And when they get in that car, they proceed to give the business pitch of why that driver should switch over. And usually it involves, you know, offering these cash rewards of $500, maybe sometimes up to $1,000 for poaching these drivers. So that's one way to kind of go about poaching your competition, if you can get them to literally come to your door and then give them the sales pitch.
Right. Well, it's interesting because these companies, I mean, they really don't own much, right? I mean, they don't own their cars. They don't hire employees. So really, this is what they're fighting for. They're fighting for these drivers who are just people who sign up to drive. They use their own cars.
Right. They're essentially matchmaking services. They're matching passengers to drivers. And really, right now, they're in a land grab trying to add as many as many passengers as they can, and that you do that by kind of creating more brand and name recognition. They're trying to get their app installed on your home screen of your iPhone or your Android phone, and that's the kind of lock-in that they want to get with millions of customers around the world. They're also trying to get allegiance of drivers, and if a driver, you know, is more loyal to Uber or Lyft. Many of them drive for both of them these days and just alternate between them. But Lyft and Uber are really aggressively trying to court these drivers by showering them with perks, giving them, you know, free money essentially to say, hey, drive with us because kind of we need you to build the biggest network.
And you talked about the differences between the company, but the truth is they're just really looking more and more alike now because they're kind of doing whatever the other's doing.
Yeah, there's so much parity right now, and every time one introduces a new feature or a new kind of adaptation of this ride-sharing concept, you likely see the other announcing this similar feature in pretty much in lockstep. That happened last week when Uber and Lyft announced, really within hours of each other, a similar feature around carpooling, which is the idea, which Lyft tells me they've been working on for several years, is rather than just kind of you taking a car from point A to point B, picking up someone along the way who is going in a similar direction and splitting the fare with them. Uber and Lyft are now trialing versions of that in some markets. And, you know, it's kind of another example of just this feature parity. If one launches a service, the other one doesn't want to kind of sit around worrying about whether that's going to take off. They want to launch a similar test on their own and just make sure that they're in that market.
Well, and another thing they both did is they've been slashing their prices, right? And how sustainable is this? I think Lyft has just changed this, but they were not taking a commission on rides.
Yeah, so earlier this year, Lyft did something pretty surprising. Maybe not so much to the world of Silicon Valley and companies that are, you know, really intent on growing and spending money to grow. But Lyft said earlier this year that it would basically subsidize all of the costs of its rides and not take a commission for any of its rides. So Lyft essentially turned off its revenue earlier this year in order to kind of grab more passengers and grab more drivers and get a bigger market and try to keep up with its rival Uber. That is not sustainable, as we're seeing, because yesterday, this week, they announced that they are going to take commission again. So we're seeing these tactics play out, and I think that, you know, Lyft is now in a position of having to try to find new ways of differentiating itself, because as we said, it is the smaller player here. That attempt to stand out from Uber by not taking a commission, you know, only was able to last a few months, and now they have to kind of find new tactics.
So this cost cutting probably good for customers. How is it for drivers? What's the experience?
So drivers are really not proving to be too loyal to either one. I spent some time in the past week riding around talking to these drivers. If you go down in San Francisco on the corner of 16th and Vermont, there's an Uber driver center, and there used to be across the street a Lyft driver center, where these two companies' battle played out just in terms of kind of courting these drivers. Lyft had a taco truck in its parking lot offering drivers, you know, free tacos and $500 for signing up, or $500 for signing up a friend to Lyft. So right now, it's a good thing to be a driver for these services, because they are showering them with perks and really going out of their way to try to get them to be loyal to these companies. But over time, you know, when some of the kind of the venture capital money that these companies have raised begins to dry up, it'll take some time, because they've both raised a combined $2 billion. we could potentially see some of the pullback and those perks and rewards for these drivers. And, you know, we're going to have to kind of see which one is able to kind of make the best pitch in the long term for these drivers.
We're discussing the rivalry between Uber and Lyft ride-sharing apps. Are you a driver, a customer, a cab driver? How is this changing industry affecting you? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum at kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And Dan Bracke, blogger and online editor with KQED, you've been following this industry and this story for a long time. We're just seeing a huge change in the way transportation working.
Well, I think that's the most interesting aspect of the story, as Doug pointed out in his piece. It's tempting and perhaps natural to look at what these things are today and see services that give rides to people, something like, you know, app-based taxi service or something like that. What's really interesting is to think about where these could go and whether the vision is to become integrated into the transportation infrastructure as well as the infrastructure of people's lives.
You mean beyond carrying passengers?
Well, I mean, I think the suggestion is that they could provide goods and services, that they could be carrying things maybe for Amazon or for Spoon Rocket, which right now a meal service, which has to have its own cars out on the street. I mean, I honestly don't know where any of that's going, but I think that is – it's wise to be looking at what these things could become. It's like, you know, Amazon was about books at first, we all thought. Guess what? That's not ever what Jeff Bezos thought.
They're about the entire world. Right. So when this started, this has all happened fairly quickly and seems to have completely caught the people who are responsible for oversight with transportation off guard.
Well, it has. I mean, everywhere this happens, there's a battle over how it should be regulated. Lyft just started operating in New York City, for instance. But at the last moment, in order to be able to roll cars on the street, they got they had to agree to a fairly stringent demands from the city about driver background checks. The other big battle is over insurance. But this has evolved, as you say, very quickly. A couple years ago, the California Public Utilities Commission was sending out cease and desist letters to these companies. Stop doing this or we're going to start charging you big daily fines. The company's response was pretty much to ignore that. Well, we're really willing to talk about what we're doing and explain it to you. And that seems to be the approach they take everywhere because it's a very, very hard business to get in front of. And, I mean, except for the pink mustaches, it's not very visible to most people what's going on the street, including the regulating authorities. Now, here in California, the big issue right now is over driver certification and over insurance. There are two bills in the legislature. They're actually going to be up for a vote tomorrow in the Senate Appropriations Committee. And Lyft and Uber and others in this business really don't like them. They don't like what they feel are overly stringent insurance requirements, and they don't like the fact that, you know, their business may be regulated like the very heavily regulated taxi businesses.
Right. Well, what to talk about the taxi businesses? I mean, there has been, you know, taxi businesses have wanted to stop these companies. Have we just gone far beyond that?
I think we have gone far beyond that. Anecdotally, if you talk to any taxi driver, we were just talking about this before we went on the air. Taxi drivers never say the world is good, but now it's really bad. Mm-hmm. They've lost drivers to these companies. The taxi companies are less and less able to provide the service they promise, and there's been sort of a feeling of discontent in San Francisco among the riding public for years and years that there aren't enough cabs on the street. And that has fed into this enthusiasm for these cars that are sort of magically there when you hit a button on your iPhone screen.
Yeah. Is there any talk in the cab industry just about adopting some of the things that have been successful for these businesses?
Yes, there has been. And there are apps that that sort of mimic some of these features that actually allow customers to hail a cab this way. Uber itself actually has an application called Uber Taxi that the DeSoto cab you see on the street or the yellow cab driver may actually be running that with a smartphone in their car, and they can take rides that way. But they lost so much momentum so quickly, or maybe the other way to look at it, these companies gain so much momentum so quickly that right now the taxi companies are really hurting.
Right. Let's hear from some of our listeners. Jared joins us from San Francisco. Hi, Jared.
Hi. Yeah, this is a fascinating topic, and I just got to say, like, in a city like San Francisco, you know, the drivers are making – you can make more during late-night hours like Lyft, and Uber will pay their drivers more money when there's more demand, especially late-night when bars let out. But let's face it, this is a difficult way to make a living. I do it – I've done it as part-time for Lyft, and – you know, the little extra money is nice if you're already going across town and you turn on the app and someone needs to ride across town too. You know, you just pay for your gas and made $20. But it's a difficult way for drivers to make a living, and I think that's what accounts for the lack of loyalty between the companies. And I think long term, this is going to be a major thing. Taxis, I mean, who's ever had a good taxi ride? So it's so much more enjoyable to use these services when you meet up with real people that you might know from your own neighborhood. But long term sustainability, I just see it as part-time jobs until these two companies figure out, you know, how they can make their business model sustainable.
So
and
you could
be able to pay more,
right? You think that these Uber and Lyft could both do things that would make it more of a job, something that would pay drivers enough to live in San Francisco?
This is the challenge of these businesses: is they've opted for this model of contract drivers as opposed to kind of full-time employees. The benefit of that to them, obviously, is that it reduces their cost. But the downside is that there's less loyalty. So to make up for that, they're trying to kind of introduce more ways to make it more affordable and economically feasible for these people to commit their lives to driving for Uber or driving for Lyft. You know, one example is Uber has started to help with car financing for some of their best drivers, can get better deals on new car financing. So that's one example of the way that kind of Uber and Lyft are trying to kind of make this picture make sense for more drivers.
We have an email from Matthew who asks, how much do Uber and Lyft drivers earn? Let's first put that to you, Jared. What can you estimate how much you earn as Lyft driver?
Well, you know, if you drive during the day, you're looking at around $20 an hour once you figure out, you know, you're paying for your insurance, you're paying for your fuel. It can be less if it's like lunchtime shifts, but if you work late night, especially Fridays and Saturdays, you can earn about $40 to $50 an hour. But there again, you know, you still have the expense of fuel, you still have the expense of insurance, and like, you know, you pointed out, I don't know if you get in an accident and somehow your insurance company finds out that, no, you weren't just making a personal trip, you were actually earning money off this trip, now you're a commercial driver. I don't know how that plays out in terms of will they cover you or not. So there's a lot of things going on, but basically between $15 and $40 okay. an hour.
All right. All right. Thanks so much for joining, Jared.
I was going to just say that insurance issue that Jared just mentioned is key to what's happening with this legislation in Sacramento right now. There is a real question, an ongoing question about whether personal automobile insurance will cover you if you're driving commercially. The companies initially staked out the position that yes, we'll fill in with insurance where personal policies don't cover, but personal policies are there in the first place, right? That's the first resort if there's an accident.
Well, and there was a wrongful death suit, right? And
there was one death. A child was killed on New Year's Eve, and there is a lawsuit over that. And that's actually a very interesting lawsuit that brings up another aspect of this, which is whether the apps that the companies are asking drivers to use actually violate state law about using personal electronic devices when you're driving. But anyway, the insurance issue is a really big one, and that's why the state, the CPUC, has tried to come in and raise the bar for the insurance coverage it requires. The state legislature wants to go further, and both companies are lobbying furiously against that.
Okay. James joins us from San Francisco. Hi, James.
Yes, hi. My question was, there's talk about Uber being global, but last time I checked in Europe, the cab drivers are smart enough to block access to the airports and shut down the highways over Uber, and Uber, you know, European countries won't be as easily corrupted, I would say, by campaign contributions from big Silicon Valley. So how realistic is it that Uber is going to be a global phenomenon?
All right. Thanks, James. Well, Doug McMillan, there are huge protests there, but also a lot of Uber drivers. Yeah.
Yeah. As we kind of mentioned before, with every new market they enter, there's a different set of regulations and a different body of politicians and regulators that they have to deal with. In Europe, there has been a particularly fierce backlash and response to these apps, but that for the most part has not stopped them from operating. Their game plan typically is to go ahead and kind of, you know, fire first and ask questions later, and they try to deploy as many cabs as they can, and they also try to get their loyal, dedicated passengers and riders and people who use these apps on their side and helping them kind of fight these battles.
Kaveen is calling from Fremont. Hi, Kaveen.
Hi. I was just very curious about how this whole autonomous car that Google's coming out with might change the whole game, not just in terms of, I guess, the technology that Google can put behind this whole thing, but also in terms of the weight that, as a big company, Google can you know, throw behind this, and many other big companies which are, you know, following suit on this. I'll take my answer off the air.
Doug McMillan?
Yeah, this is an issue that is already, you know, it's many years away for this to actually come to fruition.
Self-driving cars.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But one that these companies are already starting to think about, Uber CEO Travis Kalanick has talked about, over time, if you get kind of the self-driving car involved in this scenario, in this pickup scenario, it will lower the cost of these even more. Huh. And to that end, he's actually taken financing from Google, from Google's venture arm, Google Ventures, and partnered with Google you can now order an Uber from within Google Maps. So they're already thinking through this. It raises an interesting conflict because eventually, if Uber is using self-driving cars, they're not going to need their drivers anymore. So I think it's many years out, but potentially someone driving for Uber today could be out of a job in 20 or 30 years.
Well, it also raises the question of what big companies like Google could just enter this market on their own, right? I mean, there's a lot of room here.
Yeah, I mean, there's questions about how high the barriers to entry are in this space. They are essentially, when you strip down everything, just matchmaking services between passengers and drivers, very sophisticated matchmaking services, and they're very popular, as we say, iPhone apps that a lot of people have installed in their home screens on their phones. But if a Google or an Apple or a Facebook really wanted to get into this, you know, I think that they could potentially make a run at it.
All right. Doug McMillan is technology reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Dan Brecky, blogger and online editor for KQED. He edits News Fix, KQED's blog about news in the Bay Area and beyond. Thank you both so much for joining. Up next, the debate over whether Fremont schools should teach sex ed from a new textbook that parents say is inappropriately racy. I'm Judy Campbell. Thanks for listening.